Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility. That's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us.
On April the 16th at 2 p.m. North American Eastern Time, blind musicians from across the globe are getting together for an online benefit concert for Ukraine. It's called We're With You, and all money raised goes to the World Blind Union's Unity Fund for Ukraine. To learn more, including how to listen and how to perform at We're With You, visit mushroomfm.com/withyou. That's mushroomfm.com/withyou.
Hi, and thanks for dropping by. Welcome to Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. At least that's what we say, and I'm glad that you're able to be here and hope that you enjoy our session today. We have a person that I regard as a special guest. He's been a very close friend for, 16 years or more. Bob Sonnenberg and I met at Guide Dogs for the Blind, and he was looking at getting a job and looking at the concept of having a guide dog. And I was working at Guide Dogs for the Blind, and we had a chance to meet and talk, and friendship has grown from there. It's kind of all turned around. A couple of years ago, he drafted me to serve on a board for an organization of which he is the executive director, the Earl Baum Center of the Blind in Santa Rosa, California. Bob, welcome to Unstoppable Mindset.
Well, thank you so much, Michael, for having me, for inviting me. And it has been quite a journey over the last 16 years, that's for sure.
Well, I would love to hear about the journey. That's a good place to start. So tell us a little about you in general. You know, you grew up, I know, as a sighted person and so on. Then things changed. But tell us about your life and your journey.
So, where do you start? Okay, so one of the things is that is probably unique to me, maybe in being a native Californian and a seventh or eighth generation Californian, dating back to the 1820s here in the state of California. So somewhat unique, and there's not a lot of us in that club. But I grew up here in the San Francisco Bay Area, spent most of my childhood in Marin County, California, just north of San Francisco. Been happily married for 40 years, and that's been a journey, and have two young boys that I'm real proud of that are both married and live really close by to me. So on a personal level, it's been pretty terrific to have be surrounded by not only great friends, but also a great family. And my background, the childhood years were spent here in the North Bay, Northern California. I've also had a lot of experience. In one of my lives, I was a cowboy and was on the junior rodeo circuit years ago. So pretty fearless as far as my adventures, experiences, and love sports. And I love the concept of unstoppable, because I think it's just a great not to have any upper limits with your life. And like Michael said, 16 years ago, I'll just kind of share how my world really changed dramatically as far as being fully sighted to the not so fully sighted or the low vision world. And I was driving up to Sacramento, and all of a sudden outside the city limits, my retinas kind of shut down, and all of a sudden I couldn't see the freeway signs. And so that was my quick entry into vision loss. And the transition really wasn't, it wasn't a gentle transition. It was really an abrupt transition, and it took me a while to really absorb and figure out how to deal with it. And even from the point of telling people that I'd lost a significant amount of my sight. And I still think that was one of the hardest things I had to do when I first lost my sight, is acknowledging that I had a disability. But once I got over that fear, that issue, I was able to start moving forward. It took me a while to embrace using a cane. And once I figured out that it was a great tool to be able to use a cane and navigate safely, it was easy, you know, and it's really second natured now. And I think one of the things that has served me well, maybe from a work experience level, is prior to being involved in the nonprofit world, prior to being involved with Earl Baum Center, prior to being involved with Guide Dogs, was I was in the financial world and life insurance business, and also the investment retirement planning business. And having that expertise of 30 plus years has been pretty terrific as far as being able to meet an incredible array of people. It's all people oriented. My whole work experience has been people oriented and connecting with people and building relationships with people. And so that's really helped me in entering the new world of low vision.
Get into that, but I have to ask you a couple questions first. You said something early on that I'm really concerned about. They're married, but you still call them young boys, huh?
Well, they're younger than me, much younger than me, like half, you know, early 30s, mid 30s. So
young boys. Well, that's great. I remember them when they were a lot younger. Of course, we've been down here now for a while. I haven't seen them. So we've got to work that out. But, we continue the circle of life, as it were. So that is really cool, though. But tell me about your time on the rodeo circuit. What did you do?
So not only raced ponies, rode steers. And, you know, I had this vision when I was a kid that I would grow up and have some connection with a four-legged animal and a harness, okay? Or not a harness, but a halter, okay? Some leather type, you know, like a bridle. So right. I think it's really important, and I've kind of shared this and sometimes in talking with groups of young kids, and you got to be really clear on what you're goals are, what your vision is. And so I have a guide dog, my second guide dog. And so I am connected with a four-legged animal, not the four-legged animal that I envisioned when I was 10, 12 years old. And I'm connected with having not a bridle, but a harness. So I was there was a missing piece in my vision of when I grew up to be a grown, well, I'm still growing up, but
Is this sort of God's way of saying, be careful what you wish for?
Yeah, exactly. You'd be a little bit more clear, okay, and concise and focused. But even to this day, I know that I mentally and mechanically, I could probably go out and easily ride a horse again, and also probably even rope again.
I was just going to ask if you've done any riding, you know, not rodeo necessarily, but have you done any riding or anything in the last little while?
Not in the last little while. It's definitely on my bucket list once again. Somehow, some way, get involved in horseback riding again, because I love doing it. It's just, it's wonderful.
It's been a while since I've had that opportunity, but would love to do it again. There's nothing like the feeling of communicating with and riding a horse and interacting with them.
Yeah.
The last time I think we interacted with a horse was in New York City, and it was Roselle, actually. We were at the, I think, walking by the Plaza Hotel right across from Central Park. And Roselle saw these dogs across the street, at least she thought they were. And somebody had told me that it was the carriage horses for the carriages and all that drive around. Anyway, I said, Roselle, you want to go meet them? And she was wagging her tail. And the closer we got, the slower she walked, because they kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. She figured out they're not dogs. I don't know about this anymore. Yeah. Anyway, we went up to one and I started talking to the guy whose horse it was. And the horse's name was Charlie. And he said, well, Charlie isn't necessarily the most friendly horse, so you might be careful. But Charlie and Roselle struck up a relationship and they talked to each other. And Charlie was very friendly and sniffed Roselle, and Roselle got to sniff Charlie. And we stayed there about 10 minutes and Roselle was quite happy and comfortable. She made a new friend.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's nothing like riding a horse. I hope you get to do it some, and I hope we can do it down here sometime soon or else up there.
Yep. Yep. It's definitely on my list of things to do.
So what happened when your retina shut down? You were on the freeway. How did you deal with that immediately? What did you do?
A lot of emotions. Fortunately, I could see, I was very familiar with Sacramento and driving into Sacramento. And I just kind of, I was able to turn off the roadway safely. And actually was up there. It was early in the morning. I went to an all day conference, really not knowing what was going on other than I couldn't see very well, and went to the conference and made the decision at the end of the day, probably around 5 o'clock. It was, this was in January of 2004. So it was dark, getting dark about 5 o'clock or so. And I didn't want to call and worry my wife that I'd be late or whatever. And we had plans to meet in the city that night in San Francisco. And it was about a 80-mile drive south to San Francisco from Sacramento. And so I made the decision to get in the car, not necessarily the best decision I've ever made, but I got in the car, and California was kind enough to put in those, what I referred to at that time, braille bumps in the freeway.
Yeah, so the bot stops.
The bot stops, whatever. Anyhow, I just got in the slow lane and use that as kind of my guideline and safely drove to San Francisco. And that was the last evening I drove a car, and I made it successfully. So
safely, I don't know, but you made it, which is
safely. I made it. Yeah. Didn't hit anything and hurt anybody. And I arrived. And
so what did you then do? What happened? First of all, when did you learn what caused your
blindness? So it was really interesting. This happened on a Saturday morning, and Monday morning I made arrangements to come up and see a retinal specialist in actually ironically in Santa Rosa. And I met with her, and she gave me the diagnosis that it was myopic degeneration. So similar to macular degeneration, it's really high level nearsightedness. So I don't have any dark spots, black spots. I can just, the visual acuity is just not as sharp as it was, and it's not correctable. So from that perspective, the fact that I don't have any dark spots, black spots, that's really, I count that as a blessing every day. But when we arrived home, and I sat down with each one of my sons and told them what the diagnosis was, and was just, slowly processing it. But I love to share this one story with my oldest son. I sat down with him, and he said, Dad, however I can help you, we'll help you. And if you need a ride someplace, I'll give you a ride. But I have a question for you. And the question was, well, Dad, when you lose one of your senses, I've heard that another one is supposed to get better. And I said, yeah, I've heard that too, but Rob, this just happened 2 days ago. So what are you asking me? He said, well, when are you going to get a sense of humor? So he's much bigger than me. And I just gave him a big hug, but I loved sharing that because, you know, that's kind of what it's all about. Just looking at things in a different lens and looking at it joyfully as opposed to woe is me. So having that attitude of positivity is really probably really helped me in this journey.
So what was your work at the time?
So at that time I was working for the AAA organization in Marin County, and my role and responsibility was really marketing, developing, selling their, well, everyone knows about their travel business, their property casualty, their auto insurance and homeowners insurance. Not a lot of folks knew about their life insurance business, and that was part of my background. So I was embarking on marketing for them, life insurance business in Marin County. And so right in my backyard, it was a great, you know, I lived a couple miles away from where I worked. So it was pretty cool. And, but AAA at the time really didn't know what to do with somebody that couldn't see the computer. They had no tools, no preparation for someone that couldn't really see. And, they tried a lot of different things to try and, as far as job accommodations for me. And I will never forget one of the first things that they tried to have me or suggested I embrace as far as a position, not in the life insurance business, but in another role, another responsibility within the organization. They said, Bob, we'd like you to answer the phone. And I'm sure my reaction was, it was a stunned silence because it was not something that I really cherish doing. And fortunately for me, I only lasted with that responsibility for about 2 or 3 hours. And then they tried multiple things, and I was able to work and get support, get help from the Department of Rehabilitation, get some job accommodation type tools, magnification tools. And I didn't stop working the whole time. And I worked, would get a ride there every day to work from one of my, either my wife or my kids. And it helped me having that work ethic. It helped me having a day, every day, something to do, something to work at, and just kind of, it helped me adjust to the sight loss and doing different things. And I, you know, not only did things at interacting with people every day at the AAA organization, but also having different roles there and using the tools and being out there where I had a video magnifier, a big desktop. So it just kind of accentuated the fact that, hey, this guy has special tools. There's got to be something wrong with him. And I got, you know, it took me a while to process that. Having that ability to work every day and work at it every day and embrace that that connectivity with other people every day really helped me transfer and my fear of not having full sight anymore. And I just learned how to adjust. And it was it takes time, and it's a kind of maybe even a lifelong thing, because you just still have, maybe for myself, and I'm not sure, I really haven't talked a lot about it with other folks that have lost their sight later in life, but it's a transition period. You just have to really have the internal, maybe attitude, fortitude that you want to keep being successful. You still want to be engaged in life. And that's probably been one of the big motivators for me, you know, being curious, being fearless, constantly wanting to move forward. So
what job did you end up settling on, or did you end up with a sort of a regular job for a while at AAA?
They had, I not only gave handed out maps, gave directions to people because I knew the area that I was living in, serving in. I sold, worked at the cashier as a cashier selling travel equipment within the store. I did inventory. They had me doing a little bit of everything and a lot of everything. So, but I made some great connections with the people that I worked with. And that's kind of always been my hallmark. I maybe as far as you can't do anything you do in life. I don't think you can't do it alone. And so you need to be able to have the ability to work with people and get support from other people. And it gave me the opportunity to do that. It really, you know, in hindsight, it was a pretty low stress responsibilities that I had looking back at it. It was definitely something I hadn't done in my so-called sales production type career. You know, it was a learning experience, and I ultimately, when I got learned how to use these new tools, this video magnifier or whatever the technology that might be out there, one of the trainers I will never forget, he told me about people that I should connect with, and I'll never forget who he was and when it was and who he told me I should reach out to. So he gave me some training and brought a new piece of equipment to my house so I could use a video magnifier, a big desktop video magnifier in my house. And he set it up for me. And Steve was saying, you know, Bob, you should connect with this guy. You may have heard of him. And they said, he said, his name is Michael Hinkson. And so, being fearless, perhaps, and not bashful about reaching out, picking up the phone and calling a stranger. That's what I did. And that's how I connect with you, Mike. And, you know, ultimately connected getting a guide dog. You know, the first time I got was even considering getting a guide dog. They came and interviewed me, did a lifestyle assessment, and then they wanted to test my cane skills. Well, this was 6 months into losing my sight, and I never even touched the cane. So they told me, guide dogs told me where I was supposed to walk to, and I knew the area, and I knew the routine, and I could see well enough to navigate what I thought was safely and not bump into people. So I went on the test walk, the guide walk, and didn't bring the cane. And that was probably a bad example that I set for the guide dog instructor. But after doing that journey or after doing that test, I got back to my house and said to the guide dog trainer, I said, you know, Jim, I really don't think I need a guide dog. Okay. And my attitude was that, you know, I wasn't ready mentally to get a guide dog, but, he said, Bob, what you should do, just, you know, think your life can change. Your attitudes can change. So don't give up the thought, but wait 6 months, wait a year, whatever. And that's what I did. And so slowly I figured I had to figure out how to use a cane. So once I adopted and embraced using the cane, I practiced every day. I was working at AAA every break I had. Every lunchtime I had, if I had to wait for a ride to get picked up, I'd be out there practicing using the cane until I felt really comfortable doing it. And it just became part of my life. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, Mike.
It does. It does. And yeah. So you eventually got to the point where you decided to go out and get a guide dog. Is your eye condition a degenerative one? Is it stable? I'm not asking you are stable, but just your eye condition.
Yeah. Okay. Fortunately, my eye condition has been really, really stable for the last really almost since the beginning. I used to get a lot of on a regular basis shots of Avastin, which would help ward off perhaps the macular degeneration portion, and really it got to the point where I haven't had a shot for at least a dozen years as far as shots in the eye to deal with the myopic degeneration. I get it tested regularly, and I know what the difference is as far as if there's any significant change.
Well, let me ask and this question. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say one of the things, and I've always had maybe some eye issue. One of my eyes has never had really good functional vision growing up. I played a lot of sports, but I really just saw out of one eye, and my left eye was always been known as a so-called lazy eye. So it really had no functional vision. I can see maybe two fingers, 2 feet in front of me if I'm lucky, but so. And my left eye tends to wander quite a bit. So to keep people that I interact with on a regular basis and on a daily basis, I wear a patch over my left eye to make the person I'm interacting with feel more comfortable.
Interesting way to deal with it and to look at it. Well, I'm curious, although the condition is not necessarily one that will change a lot over time, what would you do or how would you react, because you obviously do still depend on eyesight to at least a degree, if not a significant degree, what would happen to you? What would your attitude be if you lost the rest of your eyesight?
You know, I think I could, I don't like to think about it, number one, but if I did, I could make the adjustment. You know, and I think having made the adjustment from fully sighted to low vision, that's helpful to have in my background. But I've connected with folks, you know, Michael, like you, who no sight, have a master's in physics. And so I really try to be inspired by people that have, that I think are very accomplished in what they do, that have either no sight or sight similar to mine. And they serve as for me, a role model, an inspiration that, you know, it gives maybe some degree of comfort that they're successful, they're moving forward with their life. I can do the same thing.
Well, you and I have chatted a lot about this, but
yeah.
Let me pose this question. So the National Federation of the Blind is an organization of over 50,000 blind people that has been around since 1940. And its second major president, Dr. Kenneth Jernigan, wrote an article called A Definition of Blindness that was published in the 1960s. At the time, he was the director of the Iowa Commission for the Blind, as well as being the president of the Federation. And one of the premise of the article was that you are blind, or you ought to think of yourself as blind, if your eyesight diminishes to the point where you have to use alternatives to full eyesight in order to function. And when you start to have to use large print or magnifiers or whatever, you should learn the techniques of blindness and recognize that you are in fact a blind person. That blindness is not a total lack of eyesight, but blindness is a characteristic that defines is probably the wrong word, but a characteristic that you acquire where you've lost enough eyesight that you have to do things differently. What do you think about that?
I think about it probably every day. And one of the things I've realized that it takes me more time to prepare for things, to practice. It takes me more time to practice things. And I still try and do everything I did in the sighted world. And one of the things I took up a few years back was that I like sports. And so I took up tandem bike riding. Okay. And know that I do not ride in the front. I'm not the pilot on the bike, but I got a guy that used to be a real pilot, and he flew off aircraft carrier. So I've been really fortunate to connect with some amazing people in my life and having an attitude of no fear or not, yeah, no fear, I think is maybe a good way to describe it. But I've had a chance to throw out a couple of first pitches in baseball games, and threw out a first pitch in the American League and also the National League. And I know that from an athletic standpoint, I probably wouldn't have had that experience if I was fully sighted. There'd be no reason for me to get that opportunity. So, you know,
Did you throw strikes?
I threw strikes, and it's validated. Okay, just so you know, you feel free to do a Google search, Bob Sonnenberg first pitch. It's actually memorialized, and the announcer who put it up there on YouTube initially is a kid that I coach in Little League baseball. So it's amazing how full circle things are in life. But I did throw a strike.
Let's just point out that there's this other guy named Fauci who threw out a pitch at the Nationals baseball game, and he didn't throw a strike, you know. So
yeah,
you are welcome to say that he should keep his day job.
But good, yeah, yeah.
But you know, that's exciting.
A lot of things are, you know, that I'm able to do. A lot of it is mental and it's mechanics. And so if you keep that in perspective, that's how I kind of look at things and know that if I keep that mental and mechanics up, because I've done it before, I can do it again type thing. And I could probably throw a strike with my eyes closed too.
But isn't that what it's really about? It's really all mental.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And oftentimes we allow ourselves to get distracted or we allow ourselves to become fearful. And as I call it, blinded by fear, because things happen to us and we don't learn how to adjust, or as some people would say, roll with the punches. And we just allow ourselves to be overcome by things that aren't truly relevant, and that we allow ourselves to not adapt and grow when things come along to give us that opportunity.
That's absolutely true. I think it's one of the amazing things that I get to see at the Earl Baum Center every day, to connect with people that are going through that transition. A really neat thing happened actually just this morning, Mike, that maybe about a month ago, I did a presentation to a group of folks actually in Marin County via Zoom. It was a vision support group, and they asked me after the first year, if I'd like to say a few words to this group. And so I had a good Zoom meeting with them. And some of the people in the group I had known from another chapter in my life. And so having that familiarity was really pretty cool. And one of the individuals I met as a result of doing that, he called me afterwards and said, "Bob, I'd like to come to the Earl Baum Center, but I understand that you take the SMART train. I've never taken the SMART train." So I met him at the train depot 7 o'clock one morning, and we took the SMART train together. He came up here. I introduced him to my coffee place, and I introduced him to my driver that I get a ride from from the train station to the Earl Baum Center every day. And he got some instruction here at the Earl Baum Center that day. Well, this morning he's coming back for another training session. He's sitting in the lobby here at the Earl Baum Center, and he had made the SMART train journey all by himself, gotten here all by himself. It was kind of full circle to see that, you know, and he wasn't afraid of doing that. He'd never taken the train before, prior to joining me on the train that one day, just 30 days ago. So to see that transformation, pretty phenomenal.
It's, again, all about mindset, and it's all about being the creator of your own mental attitude. And I've heard so many stories like that. It's great to hear. It's exciting. And hopefully he will continue to grow. In growing up myself, I've heard a number of stories like that. There's a guy, he has since passed. He passed last year. His name is Don Morris, a longtime friend of mine through the National Federation of the Blind. I met him when I first went to Iowa to work on the Kurzweil project back in 1976 or early 77. And Don was a type one diabetic, lost his eyesight literally almost overnight, totally lost his eyesight due to diabetic retinopathy. And he happened to go to the Iowa Commission for the Blind for services. He lived in Iowa. The commission at the time in the 60s was the lead agency, as much as anything because of the attitude that Dr. Jernigan instilled in the agency, which is that blindness isn't the problem, it's our attitude. And that blind people, although we use alternative techniques, blind again being not just totally blind, but we use alternative techniques to what sighted people do. So Don went to the center before he lost his eyesight. He had worked for Iowa Bell before the breakup, part of the telephone company. He was the number one sales guy. He had sold more than twice what everyone else had sold. Well, he went to the commission and then went back to doing the same job. And because of what he learned and because of his attitude and mindset, he was able to continue to do the job. And, oh, by the way, continue to sell like twice as much as anyone else. But then an opportunity came along where they were looking for someone to teach people to sell. And he applied, and they would not let him apply for the job. They kept saying things like, we would rather you be where you are because you're bringing so much in for us. And he said, but this is a promotion and I ought to have the right for a promotion and all that. And they said, but you're doing so well. So he finally called the National Federation of the Blind and the Iowa Commission, got resources from both to help, sat down with the Bell people and learned that the real issue was that they didn't think a blind person could teach. Didn't matter what he had done, didn't matter what his track record was. They didn't think that a blind person could teach, which is, of course, what we run into all the time, people's perceptions of what blind people can do and not do. So Don quit. He left the Iowa Bell Company and kind of had his customer database with him. Another great connector, by the way, I would say. And for those who are listening and think about it, Bob is one of the greatest connectors that I know, period. You connect with people and you emphasize that in our time today. But anyway, so Don quit, started his own company. And he, I think I may have told this story before, but he told people that he went to, his customers and others, go off and get your best quote from Iowa Bell and then come to us and we will charge you only half of what we save you over a 3-year period. And I said, how did that work out for you? And he said, generally it worked out really well given the prices they charge. I said, but did you ever have a situation where you didn't save anyone anything? And he said, I had one customer who only owed me a nickel for 3 years worth of work. And that's all he gave me. And he said, I thought that was great. That's fair. That's what I committed to. Yeah. When he retired from that job and retired because he started the company, when he retired and left the company, he said, I paid more in taxes the last year than I made as a salesperson working for Iowa Bell. But it's all unstoppable mindset. And he learned that, you've learned that. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it?
It really is. And it's got to come from within you, within the individual. You know, it's really easy to maybe share that story, but to be able to demonstrate from a living standpoint, that's what makes a difference.
And it is all about practicing what you preach and not just talking. Yeah. And it's so easy for people to talk about it, but there are many unstoppable mindset people I know, and you know, you prove it every day. You've demonstrated what can be done. And you are great at building relationships. And so you joined Guide Dogs for the Blind. When did you join Guide Dogs?
In 2006. And it was really, But one of the things in joining guide dogs, it opened up a whole new chapter for me as far as, you know, a bigger world than working in a retail shop in one solo marketplace at AAA. So, because it gave me a chance to, I've worked in the development arena. And so my job was connecting with people, which was great, but it also gave me a chance to travel not only the greater Bay Area, but really ultimately all over the country, and to meet people that supported an organization that dealt with blindness was pretty empowering. Empowering in so many different levels, and such a unique opportunity for many times and many different groups of people, many different places with people. But traveling independently like that, that's really helped me, having that experience, getting on a plane, getting on a train, getting on a bus, whatever the case may be, and doing it sometimes, not doing it alone sometimes, but also doing it as part of a group sometimes too. So,
well, and of course,
it really made a difference.
And yeah. Development, for those who don't know, in the nonprofit world is fundraising, is helping to acquire the funds to support the organization.
And one of the benefits of not seeing when you do that type of work, Michael, and the audience, is that you can picture what people's reaction might be when you talk to people about providing funds, providing support for organization. You always think, I always kind of picture that it's mentally, they're thrilled to talk about it. And I know many times they're very uncomfortable talking about money stuff, but, you know, having the background that I did in the insurance business and the investment business, money was a pretty easy skill set to be able to talk about, communicate about. So I always looked at it as a great tool to be able to kind of mentally picture that people were, you know, they like what they heard from you. Okay. But I couldn't really see their reactions, but that's what I pictured. So
then you worked at Guide Dogs for a while. And eventually you left. How did you get connected with Earl Baum?
So I was at I worked for Guide Dogs for 10 years and in the development arena. And an opportunity came up with Earl Baum, which is just up the road, 30 miles up the road from where I was living, where I was working at Guide Dogs. And they were looking to maybe formalize their fundraising, their development department. And so they needed someone with development experience, and having the combination sight loss and development experience, it was a really natural transition for me, and a great opportunity for me to be able to do that. And I've been here at the Earl Baum Center for 5 years. And I initially oversaw the development and have made some inroads relative to that. But then an opportunity 3 years ago, I had an opportunity to become the CEO of the organization. So, you know, once again, you know, being fearless, utilizing maybe all the tools, all the stuff that I had experienced prior to losing my sight, to demonstrate it in the world of low vision now is a exciting opportunity, challenging opportunity every day. It's challenging, but it's definitely allowed me the opportunity to develop or improve, and it's a constant work in progress, but improve my skill set, my ability to do more things, to try new things, and to be around, to be kind of the springboard for people in the North Bay here who have lost their sight to come to be part of this organization, to see people flourish, you know, to know that there's hope, give them joy, give them hope, give them tools, provide the training, provide the community support, to be successful with their life, to enjoy their life once again, and not dwell on the negativity of sight loss.
Tell us a little bit more about EarlBaum, what the center is, how long it's been around, your vision going forward, because it has been considered a pretty small agency up in the Santa Rosa area. And you are definitely growing it. You drafted me to be on the board, so I'm prejudiced, but just in looking at it objectively and looking at what you've done, but tell us more about the center.
You know, I think we serve four different counties. So we serve Sonoma County, Napa, Lake, Mendocino counties. And there's a tremendous number of people as far as maybe older adults that have issues with sight loss and at different degrees. But we work with and get clients through the Department of Rehabilitation Blind Services Group. We get clients, folks with sight loss from the Veterans Administration. And then we get clients from the community of ophthalmologists here in the counties that we serve. And so when you lose your sight, it's a loss, and it's scary. And we try and promote ourselves and as a place where you can maybe transform your life once again, maybe re-energize your life once again. But one of the things that is key to the EarlBaum Center as a vision rehabilitation organization is we have 16 employees and incredible, passionate folks, staff that really love helping other people and love seeing success in other people and that transformation thing. So when you come to the EarlBaum Center, one of the first kind of door openers for folks is that a majority of folks do have some sight remaining. So we will go through what's known as a low vision clinic process where a trained licensed professional optometrist will review, analyze someone's remaining sight and perhaps recommend tools that might help and give them hope that they can use some of their remaining sight to kind of move on with their life. And so when you as a client hear that you can come to a place and maybe get some hope or maybe get some joy back to your life, that's a great inspiring thing to have out there. You need hope. You need something to look forward to. And we provide that hope. We provide that joy. We provide not only the tools that are readily available to folks with low vision, but we train people on how to use those tools, whether it be assistive technology. We have assistive technology instructors. We have orientation and mobility. And that's basically, one of the pieces is that how to travel safely with a cane. So we provide incredible training relative to that. And there's all types of living experiences. You know, when you can't see, how do you get dressed in the morning? How do you match up your clothes? How do you put on your makeup and all of that stuff? We provide all those tools and we provide training with all those tools. So that's what we do every day, and incredibly gifted people that do that instruction every day. It's great to be part of it. So
that's cool. How many, not to put you on the spot, how many blind people work at EarlBaum today?
We have two, me being one of that group. Right. So I've got the low vision experience. And then we have a lady by the name of Denise Vansel, who is actually the longest tenure. She's been here for the organization 20 years. And so we've been in business 20 plus years. So, and she has no sight whatsoever. And just a remarkable individual woman, mother of two and married and incredible inspirational person. So
that's cool. And hopefully more blind people, if you hear this, will explore and consider possible job opportunities at Earlbaum, because you certainly, as the CEO, do hire from time to time, but it's more important to let people know that the center exists, both people who could use the services and also people who might be looking for a job as job opportunities come along.
We definitely, you know, we at one time we had 4 folks with sight loss, actually 2 other totally blind folks that were instructors, and they both went on to new different opportunities, but their talents and their skill set were incredible. And the potential growth opportunities for the Earlbaum Center, this is the demographics are such, not only here locally, but also in the whole state of California, the population's getting older. And so with older adults come health issues. And obviously one of them very well could be sight loss. So the marketplace is definitely in need of talented, great communicators, great teachers, and really, you know, having me do what I do from a, you know, commuting up here, taking the SMART train every day, public transportation, you know, just there's really, we need folks that are willing to inspire others. And that's kind of what a great way to do it, by demonstrating and using the skill set of folks with sight loss.
Great role models.
Yeah.
So I want to turn a little bit to something we've talked about. It is something that all of us deal with from time to time, and that's just the whole concept of accessibility and inclusion. And as you know, I work for Accessibee, which is all about internet inclusion. But we all face the same things that you faced as a fully sighted person and have now learned to view it from a different perspective. And that's the whole concept of inclusion and accessibility. How do we get people in general to start to maybe change their views about persons with disabilities? And I don't know of a better term to use. Disabilities is what we're all categorized as, although I think that whether that's right or wrong, we can certainly change the definition of disability. It doesn't merely need to be one where we don't have ability, and so maybe we need a new word. But the reality is, as you've pointed out, we all have different gifts. And so you are a person who doesn't have one particular gift that is the gift of eyesight. You have other gifts that people with eyesight don't have, whoever you are. How do we start to really get people overall to change their view about persons who are different than they?
Maybe education. If you're going to pick one word, education, and making people feel comfortable and understand, you know, I mean, the world today is that education is such a big piece of anyone's success. And in one of the things that I maybe deal with is on an everyday basis is when you do have a disability, getting comfortable with situations. So like one of the things that I always think about is when I go to big gatherings and I can't see who's there. It takes me a while to navigate, to feel comfortable. You know, and the more it's like anything, the more you get in a position where you do go get involved with different groups, different crowds, you feel more comfortable. And the more you do it, it's like practice. So I try and always look for opportunities like that. And I get that by traveling, by, you know, whether it be the conductors or the clerk at the coffee store, whatever the case may be, is just, you know, just having them connect at a individual personal basis, you know, building a relationship with people. And it's tough to do it, and you can really just do it one person at a time, but you sometimes you get, it's frustrating that you can't do it 20 people at the same time, but
sometimes you can.
Yeah.
But it's true. It is all about education, you know, and for me, I deal with internet access every day, but I also do recognize that words matter. And I think one of my stories that I think about, and something that I didn't used to think about a lot, but now I do, is how you and I are described. People tend to describe us as visually impaired. And I think it was Brian Bashan, who we both know, who is the CEO of the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind. At least this is where I first heard the concept of, we're not visually impaired because we don't necessarily look different simply because we're blind. We're not less looking, if you will, because we're blind. It's more appropriate to say vision impaired. And although I think I got lots of vision, I don't have eyesight, but I'll accept that eyesight and vision are somewhat synonymous. But I think it's appropriate to discuss vision impairment, but not visually impaired, because we're not visually impaired simply because we go blind or lose our eyesight to some degree.
Agree with that. Yep.
And it is something that we face. And of course, people talk about visually impaired, and that is a negative cue for people in a lot of ways. And it is part of what we need to change. And the concept of vision impairment, boy, if I look at a lot of people in Washington, D.C. today who have fully functional eyesight from a vision standpoint, they're incredibly impaired, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is an issue. But the fact is that we are, and I think it's better to look at us as persons with a vision impairment. And I also try to educate people, as we've discussed, about blind, which isn't necessarily totally blind. But I've heard educators, I've literally been in a room with an educator who talked about two students, one who was totally blind and another one who was partially blind. And they said the partially blind one can still read print and gets to read print. The totally blind one has to read Braille. Look at the difference in what the terminology is. And it's that kind of subtle terminology that plagues us everywhere we go, because the reality is that the person who is partially blind and uses large print and magnifiers will never read at the speed of a totally blind student who grows up learning Braille and learning it well. And I'm sure you can attest to it, although you're not a Braille reader, but you can attest to how much of a challenge it is to read printed material.
Yeah, absolutely. And I marvel at people that read Braille. It was when I first, one of the great stories that it's a guide dogs related story, but I had never, when I first got my first guide dog in 2006, I had never been around two people or three people that were either blind, totally blind, or low vision. And to be in a group surrounded for 30 days or so with 22 dozen people that had different levels of sight loss, that was the most incredibly educational experience that I ever have had. Because I got to, you know, like you talked about, understand, I got to be educated that, you know, to see how other people navigated with sight loss, and to have that real world experience was, you know, it's something that you never forget. It's really made all the difference to have that groundwork, that experience. And so that kind of having that same community experience like I had during getting that first guide dog is really kind of what Earl Baum Center does. We provide a safe community where people can experience sight loss and get the first toe in the water, so to speak, that, you know, you can do this stuff. It's not the worst thing in the world. You're living, breathing, and living life. So you only get to do this life thing once. You may as well have fun doing it. You may as well enjoy it. And really easy to say, but it takes work. Like, it's kind of like life. I mean, you got to put one foot in front of the other constantly. So,
and you move forward learn to move forward.
Yeah.
So in summary, we've been doing this a while and I really appreciate it. I know you've got things to do, but in summary, what would you say to people who come to you and say, I'm losing eyesight or I'm facing something different in my life, I can't do it? How would you respond to that sort of thing? How would you advise people to go?
Look for people that will inspire you. You know, I've had in the last couple of months, there's a guy that I knew, he's been dealing with sight loss for 10 years as a result of glaucoma and has been very, very reclusive. And he's a guy that I knew 20 years ago, father of a son, my kid's age. And he was we just connected and I probably have spent more time with him in the last month than I had 20 years prior to that, but have given him some hope and that, you know, he doesn't have to do this stuff alone. There are solutions, there are answers, there's opportunities out there. So, you know, embrace the opportunities, embrace sight loss, because without embracing it, you're not going to move forward. You're not going to be unstoppable. You're just going to go back in your shirt and a shell, to so to speak. And not to that, that's bad for some people. That's what they want. But, you know, I think it's I've been really blessed to have a constant move forward attitude.
And that is a great way to summarize it all, because it's made you unstoppable in a lot of different ways. And we all find challenges, but we can move forward. And I'm really glad and blessed to know you and to hear your story again today. And I really think that you epitomize what we talk about when we talk about unstoppable.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for, you know, Michael, for doing what you do, and thank you for being the friend that you are. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you in return for the same thing. So if people want to reach out to you and meet you, or they want to learn about Earl Baum and want to get your advice and words of wisdom, how do they do that?
You know, it's really easy. We're obviously have a website, Earl Baum, and that's earlebaum.org. Santa Rosa, California. We're here to help, and we love to help people move forward with their life.
Well, I hope people will reach out, and you have certainly been an inspiration, and you have certainly given us a lot of advice and a lot to think about. And you are unstoppable. And I know I use that word a lot, but that's what the podcast is about, and rightly so. So thank you, Bob, for being with us.
My pleasure.
If people want to learn more about Unstoppable Mindset, if you just discovered us, we are available wherever podcasts can be reached. You can also search on www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. And Michael Hingson is MichaelHingson. So michaelhingson.com/podcast. You can also email me if you'd like to reach out. We love to hear from people. I've gotten requests from people who have said, I know someone who should be on your podcast, or I like what I hear, or I'd like to see you do more of this. And we love input. You can email me at michaelhi@accessibe.com. michaelhi@accessibe.com. And we didn't mention it, but Earl Baum is an Accessibe user. And we thank you for that, Bob.
You bet. Our pleasure.
Well, everyone, thanks for dropping by. We hope that you'll tune in again next week for another Unstoppable Mindset podcast. And in the meanwhile, have a good week and stay blessed and stay positive and unstoppable.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Bob.
You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled MichaelHingson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibe, and is sponsored by Accessibe. Please visit www.accessibe.com. Accessibe is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.